Well, later today, we're going to look at the taxes kicking in today because of the fiscal deal. Also today, a new 2.3% sales tax on medical devices. The industry is fighting it, but some economists say manufacturers should be able to pass on the cost. Well, there's a lot of that in healthcare. Remember the story we did recently on a man given a sling after elbow surgery? The medical device company billed his insurance $83 for that sling, and he found it later online for $7. According to a recent report by the Institute of Medicine, there are $750 billion a year in excess medical costs, while medical outcomes aren't better than those in countries which spend far less. So we recently invited Dr. Amitabh Chandra, economist and professor of public policy at Harvard University and director of health policy research at Harvard's Kennedy School, to come to our studios to talk medical expense. And let's start with, if we may, what we heard from listeners after we talked about that $83 sling. People were writing us with similar cases. Here's a woman who also needed an arm sling. She got a bill for $120 and told the surgeon's office, "I want to return this." And the office said, "Well, what do you care? It's covered by insurance." Patty Murphy works for a company helping them with their insurance, and she says an employee had a surgery that everyone considered very minor, but the bill was $5,000. And when they called, they realized that there was a $250 charge for the pen used to mark the skin, which the patient said was just a Sharpie, another $1,000 for the room, which a few weeks before had just been considered, a doctor's office, and it was a $200 charge. You're nodding your head. Is this part of the waste we're talking about?
I think it absolutely is part of the waste that we're talking about. It is one unfortunate side effect of having insurance. The wonderful thing about insurance is that it protects us from financial uncertainty. But as part of that protection, it also insulates me from prices. I don't really know the cost of anything that I consume as an insured patient. And so providers have every incentive to sort of make up the prices. One of the stories, one of the letters that you read out, where the provider said, "Gee, you have insurance." And that's exactly right. If the minute I have insurance, I don't care whether the bill is $20,000 or $30,000 because I'm not paying it.
Yeah. Before we move on to other costs, we heard from another listener who says, "I work for a company that has to figure out some of these pricings." And he said one of the problems is it costs almost $500 to process any item. So when they're charging $120 for a sling, they're still losing money.
Very few people are losing money in healthcare.
Okay.
It is 20% of GDP. So, no, I don't believe the argument that people are actually losing money selling things at $120
because
when they should be going for $20.
Although, do you agree that administrative costs are part of the waste and the cost of healthcare?
Absolutely. So there's a fair bit of waste surrounding the administrative costs. Physician offices hire a lot of people to help that physician get credentialed. So if I'm a physician and I'm dealing with 6 insurers and I work in 3 hospitals, I need a staff of people that will help to ensure that I'm credentialed with each of those 6 insurers and 3 hospitals. That's a lot of paperwork.
Yeah.
In addition, I need a staff to fill out different forms for different insurers. And some of those insurers will deny my claims because I made a small mistake. And so I have to refile that paperwork all over again. But I will push back on one point, which is that not all administrative costs in healthcare are pure waste. Insurers do from time to time deny claims, and sometimes they deny claims correctly. And when they deny claims correctly, it's actually a good thing that some administrator looked at the claim and said this was not a claim that was justified by the condition that the patient presented himself with. And so that's an example of an administrative cost that's actually a way to control quality and improve the value of care that patients are receiving. At the end of the day, though, I will say one thing, which is if we're talking about price inflation for a $7 sling, and even if we could wave a magic wand and get rid of all the excess pricing power around slings, simply getting rid of an extra angioplasty would save us $20,000. So there's a whole, there's an avalanche of technologies out there where the sling problem is, the sling problem is like a mosquito bite compared to where the spending really is.
Talk more about this. This is your thing, the waste on procedures that aren't needed. An angioplasty, $20,000. Who's getting angioplasties that aren't needed? And by the way, an angioplasty is when you put a little balloon through a vein to open it up, like if someone's having heart issues.
That's exactly right. So that is what angioplasty is. And we know a lot of things about angioplasty. First, that it's expensive. Second, that it is life-saving. But it is life-saving when used right after a heart attack, for example. And so the answer is not let's get rid of angioplasty. The problem occurs when angioplasty is given to people who come in with, say, stable coronary disease. In that group of patients, these are patients who have not had a heart attack, we see a lot of patients receive an angioplasty, and they're told that, you know, if you get an angioplasty done to you, you will avert a heart attack or it'll improve the quality of your life. But we have clinical trials now documenting that that is not true. And so,
well, later today, we're going to look at the taxes kicking in today because of the fiscal deal. Also today, a new 2.3% sales tax on medical devices. The industry is fighting it, but some economists say manufacturers should be able to pass on the cost. Well, there's a lot of that in healthcare. Remember the story we did recently on a man given a sling after elbow surgery? The medical device company billed his insurance $83 for that sling, and he found it later online for $7. According to a recent report by the Institute of Medicine, there are $750 billion a year in excess medical costs, while medical outcomes aren't better than those in countries which spend far less. So we recently invited Dr. Amitabh Chandra, economist and professor of public policy at Harvard University and director of health policy research at Harvard's Kennedy School, to come to our studios to talk medical expense. And let's start with, if we may, what we heard from listeners after we talked about that $83 sling. People were writing us with similar cases. Here's a woman who also needed an arm sling. She got a bill for $120 and told the surgeon's office, I want to return this. And the office said, well, what do you care? It's covered by insurance. Patty Murphy works for a company helping them with their insurance, and she says an employee had a surgery that everyone considered very minor, but the bill was $5,000. And when they called, they realized that there was a $250 charge for the pen used to mark the skin, which the patient said was just a Sharpie, another $1,000 for the room, which a few weeks before had just been considered, you know, a doctor's office, and it was a $200 charge. You're nodding your head. Is this part of the waste we're talking about?
I think it absolutely is part of the waste that we're talking about. It is one unfortunate side effect of having insurance. The wonderful thing about insurance is that it protects us from financial uncertainty. But as part of that protection, it also insulates me from prices. I don't really know the cost of anything that I consume as an insured patient. And so providers have every incentive to sort of make up the prices. One of the stories, one of the letters that you read out where the provider said, gee, you have insurance. And that's exactly right. If the minute I have insurance, I don't care whether the bill is $20,000 or $30,000 because I'm not paying it.
Yeah. Before we move on to other costs, we heard from another listener who says, I work for a company that has to figure out some of these pricings. And he said one of the problems is it costs almost $500 to process any item. So when they're charging $120 for a sling, they're still losing money.
Very few people are losing money in healthcare.
Okay.
It is 20% of GDP. So, no, I don't believe the argument that people are actually losing money selling things at $120
because
when
they
should be going for $20.
Although, do you agree that administrative costs are part of the waste and the cost of healthcare?
Absolutely. So there's a fair bit of waste surrounding the administrative costs. Physician offices hire a lot of people to help that physician get credentialed. So if I'm a physician and I'm dealing with six insurers and I work in three hospitals, I need a staff of people that will help to ensure that I'm credentialed with each of those six insurers and three hospitals. That's a lot of paperwork.
Yeah.
In addition, I need a staff to fill out different forms for different insurers. And some of those insurers will deny my claims because I made a small mistake. And so I have to refile that paperwork all over again. But I will push back on one point, which is that not all administrative costs in healthcare are pure waste. Insurers do from time to time deny claims. And sometimes they deny claims correctly. And when they deny claims correctly, it's actually a good thing that some administrator looked at the claim and said this was not a claim that was justified by the condition that the patient presented himself with. And so that's an example of an administrative cost that's actually a way to control quality and improve the value of care that patients are receiving. At the end of the day, though, I will say one thing, which is if we're talking about price inflation for a $7 sling, and even if we could wave a magic wand and get rid of all the excess pricing power around slings, simply getting rid of an extra angioplasty would save us $20,000. So there's a whole, you know, there's an avalanche of technologies out there where the sling problem is, you know, the sling problem is like a mosquito bite compared to where the spending really is.
Talk more about this. This is your thing, the waste on procedures that aren't needed. An angioplasty, $20,000. Who's getting angioplasties that aren't needed? And by the way, an angioplasty is when you put a little balloon through a vein to open it up, like if someone's having heart issues.
That's exactly right. So that is what angioplasty is. And we know a lot of things about angioplasty. First, that it's expensive. Second, that it is life-saving. But it is life-saving when used right after a heart attack, for example. And so the answer is not, let's get rid of angioplasty. The problem occurs when angioplasty is given to people who come in with, say, stable coronary disease. In that group of patients, these are patients who've not had a heart attack, we see a lot of patients receive an angioplasty, and they're told that, you know, if you get an angioplasty done to you, you will avert a heart attack or it'll improve the quality of your life. But we have clinical trials now documenting that that is not true. And so we have a lot of overuse of medical care that really doesn't generate any therapeutic value. And then there's another form of waste that comes along with that kind of health care, which is giving patients the care that they don't want.
But like,
they
like
have
what?
Been
like what?
Radical prostatectomy to a man. So we take a man, he has an elevated PSA test, and he's told, you need radical prostatectomy. Well, that costs a little bit of money. It's not as expensive as angioplasty.
And this is to avert prostate cancer.
Yes. But the problem with radical prostatectomy is not only that it costs money and that it is not necessarily or automatically better than waiting and watching. The problem with radical prostatectomy and giving it indiscriminately to people is that many men, if they had full information about the side effects on things like incontinence, may have said, hey, doc, I'm okay with not getting the radical prostatectomy. So I think we have two forms of costs in American healthcare. One is the straight financial dollar cost of providing technologies and treatments to people that they don't want. But another cost is a far more pernicious cost. It's the psychic cost of giving the patient care that they do not want.
Okay, well, let's talk a second about that. We just did a story recently, actually, on doctors who might be giving prostate cancer candidates a radiation treatment that they also may not need, and there's some suspicion that some of these doctors have a financial interest in the machines. But then, you know, doctors are afraid of getting sued. You don't give the person that procedure, and it turns out that maybe they did have a more serious form of cancer. You may be sued for it. Isn't that part of why we're seeing a lot of these treatments?
Yes and no. I think that medical malpractice certainly weighs heavily on the minds of physicians. Medical malpractice has a tremendous emotional cost. Doctors hate the uncertainty with which they're sued. They hate the fact that juries often allocate damages to patients who suffered an injury, not necessarily patients who suffered medical malpractice. Doctors hate having their name dragged through the local newspaper and having to go testify. But in terms of whether it actually is responsible for the stunning use of healthcare that we see in our system today, I'm less convinced.
Harvard economist and health policy specialist Amitabh Chandra. Let's pick up there after a break. How is it that fear of malpractice suits doesn't drive up costs? And as always, we'd love to hear your experiences with medical waste at hereandnow.org, where we'll also link you to the story that started all of this, the man with the $80 sling. More with Amitabh Chandra in 1 minute, Here and Now. Welcome back. We've been talking about healthcare spending with Professor Amitabh Chandra, an economist and public health researcher with Harvard University's Kennedy School. By one estimate, wasteful spending is over $700 billion a year. Professor Chandra says that's fat marbled around and throughout the meat of the medical system, unnecessary treatments, bureaucracy, overpricing, waste, and fraud, with doctors in some cities giving more unnecessary treatments than in others, particularly angioplasties, which work best after a heart attack but are being given to prevent one where they don't work well. Before the break, I asked if doctors were doing more procedures because of fears of lawsuits and that was driving up costs. Amitabh said no. Let's pick up there.
I think that there is defensive medicine out there. I think that doctors do sometimes deliver more care to avert being sued, but some doctors deliver less care because they don't want to be sued. So some doctors will say, this looks like a particularly litigious patient, or this looks like a patient who is at high risk for an injury, so I'm not going to operate on that patient. So defensive medicine cuts in both directions. Some doctors do too much, but some doctors pass up on doing a lot because they're terrified of being sued. So it's a bad thing, but it doesn't automatically increase spending.
Well, this idea too, going back to the angioplasty, which again, you say it's this high-ticket kind of item that really is where waste is in the medical system, $20,000 for an angioplasty. It seems like this is a matter of education then, because if you're someone who has heart issues or you have a beloved parent who does and you've heard about angioplasties, you're going to want to get one to be denied one to save money. Sounds an awful lot like rationing.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. There's the wonderful paper published in the Annals of Internal Medicine where a team from Bay State Medical Center right here in the Commonwealth studied patients' perceptions of angioplasty and compared them to the perceptions of interventional cardiologists. And what was interesting is most of the interventional cardiologists, at least the terrific ones at Bay State, said, this is not going to generate the benefit that you think it's going to generate. It's really the patients that want it. So while it's certainly true that we have some rogue cardiologists, perhaps the ones out in McAllen, Texas, or Redding, California, or Elyria, Ohio, who have pushed angioplasty on their patients, a lot of it is patients saying, we want this. And it's very hard for a doctor to not deliver angioplasty when his competitor down the road is willing to offer the angioplasty, and when we have fee-for-service medicine, which pushes or nudges the doctor in all kinds of subtle ways to do more.
So that's the thinking behind this push to switch from fee-for-service to paying for the quality of treatment, a lump sum of money, and then within that sum, find the treatment.
Absolutely. That lump sum in my wonk world is referred to as a bundle payment. And what we're doing with bundle payments is essentially thinking of the hospitalization, which right now is a revenue center. So a hospital makes more money every time a patient is hospitalized. With a bundle payment, the hospitalization goes from being a revenue center to becoming a cost center. So you switch the calculus around completely. A hospital is now getting paid a fixed amount of money to deal with the patient's coronary disease. So they have every incentive under bundle payments to prevent the patient from having an angioplasty to prevent that downstream heart attack. Under the current system, the hospital would lose money if they didn't do the angioplasty, if they didn't admit the patient. So the move towards bundled payments, which will be gradual and slow and will certainly have a lot of hiccups along the way, is actually a very, very good thing for saving money and for saving lives.
It still sounds like it's not entirely taking away the incentive to spend that money. I mean, what if the bundle only included enough for a prescription for a blood thinner as opposed to enough that you could maybe do something more serious? And so you're going to, because the money's there.
Absolutely. So what you want to do with the bundle is to make sure that on average it's the right amount. In the case of stable coronary disease, it's not the case that we make the bundle payment $20,000. The idea would be we make the bundle payment something like $5,000. So on the vast majority of patients, they would be treated medically, and the hospital would make a lot of money. Some patients would still need angioplasty, which would cost the hospital $20,000, and the hospital would lose money in those patients, but on average, it would be whole.
Potentially, they might not spend the whole $5,000 from the one patient, and that could go into the pool for the $20,000.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the key idea behind bundle payments. But they only, and the wonderful thing about bundle payments is not that it just fixes the incentives for the provider. I think far more exciting, or what I find exciting about bundle payments, is that hospitals and providers can compete for patients based on those bundles, because now we can finally say, what was the performance of all the different hospitals in Boston when it came to treating heart attacks or when it came to treating a hip fracture? Because we have a bundle payment for heart attacks and a bundle payment for hip fracture. So right now, it's very hard to measure the performance of providers because we pay providers fee-for-service, so there's 15,000 billing codes. It's impossible to measure performance for 15,000 different things. But if we have bundle payments, we probably only have something like 100 bundle payments. We take medicine and make it into these, you know, kind of break it down into these 100 buckets instead of 15,000 buckets. And it's much easier to aggregate performance and outcomes at the level of these 100 buckets.
Hmm. By the way, we have to touch on your study of salaries. The perception is that part of the waste is in huge salaries for doctors. What did you find?
earnings for the typical doctor in the United States have really not grown at all since the year 2000. So they grew about 20% during the decade of the 1990s. But doctors' earnings in real dollars today in 2012 are essentially where they were back in the year 2000. So while it is certainly the case that they get paid a lot relative to their peers in other countries, we've seen absolutely no growth in their salaries. So they are unlikely to be responsible for all the growth that we've seen in American healthcare. They are responsible in a different sense, which is ultimately one of them prescribed that angioplasty. But it is not the case that that prescription fed back into the bottom line of the typical physician.
Amitabh Chandra, he's an economist and professor of public policy at Harvard University, also director of health policy research at the Kennedy School. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And again, we want to hear your stories of medical waste or things that just plain puzzled you at hereandnow.org. Also, heads up, tomorrow on Here and Now, we'll take a look at the foreign policy and national security challenges facing the country in 2013. That and more tomorrow. Latest news is next, Here and Now.